Hi guys, my name is Rolando Juan Enriquez. Welcome to my podcast. As always, I will be talking about some fascinating topics related to data science, computations, machine learning, and artificial intelligence. This podcast and all the future materials produced by me will always be offered free of charge so that anybody can benefit from it and complement their education. The title of today's episode is Adversarial Examples. Now you see me, now you don't. Therefore, we will be talking about the very interesting universe of adversarial examples. We will discuss what they are, why do they exist, how can we create them, if there is anything we can do to avoid them, and what is their significance in machine learning. Without further delay, please just relax and enjoy the show. Well, let's get started with the topic of adversarial examples. But to tell you right away what they are, I will use a human metaphor. How many of you listening have been confused and maybe a little bit amazed by an ingenious optical illusion? I am guessing most of you. After the initial sense of wonder, if you think a little bit about it for a second, you might then ask yourself, how did that happen? Is there anything real about the optical illusion, or the problem is in my eyes or in my brain? We will come back to this point later, but for now, let's just agree on a simple fact. We are all susceptible to optical illusions. Well, guess what? Training machine learning models are also susceptible to some kind of optical illusions. Just that in this case, we give them the technical name of adversarial examples. But what do we mean exactly by that? How does this work for machine learning models? Well, please imagine that we have a trained machine learning model to classify objects in an image. For simplicity, imagine that our model is like a black box. That is, for example, we know nothing about the model, just that if we fed an input image to the model, for example, that has a turtle, the model will reply with an output that has the correct classification. That is, that the image represents a turtle, let's say with 92% of confidence. So far, so good. But what if we could slightly modify the image in a way that to our human eyes, the image will still represent a turtle, but when we fed this image to a trained machine learning model, the model would get confused and replies that in the image, instead of a turtle, we have a grasshopper with, say, 99% of confidence. Well, if we could do that, then we would have effectively created a sort of optical illusion for the model. That is, we took an original image classified correctly by the model. Second, we made a small modification to the image so that the second image is to our human eyes equal to the original. But when we fed the second image to the model, surprisingly, we see that now the turtle is classified as a grasshopper with high confidence. In a nutshell, this second image is an adversarial example. In the next segment, we will discuss a little bit about the origin of adversarial examples. Let's now discuss a bit about the origin of adversarial examples. Why do they exist? Before continuing, I think that this topic is still not fully settled, and whatever I will say here is likely to change in the next months or years. That being said, in this area, one of the first hypotheses for the existence of adversarial examples was that they were caused by nonlinearities in the machine learning models. Classical nonlinearities would be, for instance, the sigmoidal type activation functions used in many neural networks. This hypothesis was very soon discarded as some simple tests showed that even if we replace the sigmoid function by linear functions, the models were still susceptible to adversarial examples. Well, that was a dead end. What else has been done? Current research seems to be in favor of another explanation for the origin of adversarial examples, and that is the non-intuitive and kind of weird effects of the high-dimensional geometry in our data. There is more than meets the eye in this statement, so let's break it down. Our intuition tells us that if we want to predict the future values of a variable y, then the larger the number of predictive variables like x1, x2, x3, etc., that is, the larger the dimensionality, the better. For instance, if you want to predict the price of a house based only on the single variable, like the number of rooms in the house, then your predictions will be poor. On the other hand, if you try to predict the price of a house using additional variables, like for instance, the area of the house, how many floors are in the house, the city and neighborhood in which the house is located, etc., then it is likely that your prediction will be much better. Well, as it happens, this intuition seems to be only justified in the range of relatively low number of variables or dimensions of the data. What happens in reality is that increasing the number of predictive variables helps up to a certain point. But as the dimensionality gets disproportionately higher than the number of training examples, errors and weird effects like adversarial examples start to pile on. At the more basic level, the question about the origin of adversarial examples is related with the simple question that, however, has great significance. Who is to be blamed for adversarial examples? The model, through some of its characteristics, like for example nonlinearities of the data, high dimensional effects, etc.? As we mentioned at the beginning of this segment, the search is ongoing, but the balance seems to be inclined in this moment to blame the data for the existence of adversarial examples. In the next segment, I am going to discuss a bit about what can we do to improve our machine learning models, given that they are susceptible to adversarial examples. So, in the previous segment, we talked about the origin of adversarial examples, and we concluded that most research papers in the area are pointing to the high dimensionality of the data as a culprit, but the matter is still far from closed. While waiting for a definitive, theoretical answer to these questions, the AI community has been following a rather pragmatic approach to minimize the impact of adversarial examples. The approach essentially implies the enrichment of a normal training data with adversarial examples in an attempt to increase the accuracy of the classifications. So in a nutshell, the temporary solution to the problem is to do more complicated training of machine learning models using the following three steps. Step number one, we initially perform a normal training of our model. For instance, if we are training a network for image classification, we will feed images to the network and optimize the network to produce the correct labels. At the end, we save the trained network, the trained model, for example, using some sort of checkpoint. Step number two, we create an adversarial example for specific images. For example, we take an image of a turtle and modify the image so that the network misclassifies the image as a grasshopper. We repeat this process many times to obtain many adversarial examples. Step number three. Starting from the safe pre-trained network we obtained in step one, we continue the training using the adversarial examples that we obtained in step number two. the three steps that we just described is called, in general, adversarial training. Now, we can certainly imagine doing this process manually, but it would be a slow and painful experience. On the other hand, we are now lucky to have some tools that help us, like for instance, the Python library Fullbox. An even more sophisticated approach is using generative adversarial networks, or GANs. Now, we will not examine the details of GANs any further in this podcast, but for completion, let's summarize by saying that in the GANs approach, we pit two networks against each other, one counterfeiter network that generates adversarial examples, and one network that acts like the police trying to determine if a given image is an original or a forgery. By optimizing both networks at the same time, we are essentially automating adversarial training. Whether we automate the process or not, adversarial training always relies on the possibility to generate adversarial examples. So in the next segment, we will dedicate a moment to talk about the process of generating adversarial examples and the implications of this process. To understand the basic principle for creating adversarial examples, it might be educational to compare this process side by side with normal machine learning training. Let's set one scenario to work with. So imagine that we are going to work with one specific model in mind. In this case, the model classifies images. Each image contains a handwritten digit from 0 to 9. So the input to the model is an image with a digit, and the output from the model is a label that hopefully classifies correctly the handwritten digit in the image. Now that we have a model, let's see in the next two segments the process of normal machine learning training and the process for generating adversarial examples. So, let's begin discussing model training. During training, we start with a random set of parameters in the model. Because the parameters have random values at the beginning of the training, this also means that if we feed an input image representing a handwritten digit, it will be very unlikely that at this stage, our untrained model will be able to produce consistently the correct results. Let's dive a little bit deeper into this. Imagine now that we specifically feed an image with the handwritten digit 3 to our untrained model. Let's imagine that the model replies with an output label equals to 9. So 9 is what actually happened, but it's the wrong answer. The ideal answer to an input image representing 3 is a label representing 3. Therefore, we have a difference between the ideal output of the fully trained model and the output that the model is currently producing. We call this difference a misclassification cost. The process of training is essentially the process of reducing the misclassification cost by changing the parameters of the model, and we do this in several steps or iterations. The hope is that on each iteration we reduce the misclassification cost until we make it zero, if possible, so that there is no misclassification. In more mathematical terms, this means that during training we are looking for the global minimum of a function, the minimum of the misclassification cost as a function of the model parameters. Now, the fact that we are looking for global minimum has additional implications. For instance, because we most likely have a large number of parameters in the model, usually in the range of millions, for example, finding the global minimum is equivalent to explore a very large landscape of possibilities. Therefore, the process of training is generally computationally intensive. Another consequence is that if the landscape of possibilities we are exploring is complex enough, then it is also likely that once we find the global minimum, this global minimum will be relatively stable. In practical terms, this means that a fully trained model will be stable and robust to small perturbations of the parameters. So, a small conclusion from the training part. During training, we are reducing the misclassification cost by changing the parameters of the model. And we are trying to get the global minimum in this process. The training can usually be computationally expensive and normally takes longer times. However, once the training is completed, the trained model is usually stable to small perturbation in the parameters. In the next segment, I'm going to break down the process of generating adversarial examples so that we can compare it to what we just said about training. And now we're back to dive a little deeper in the details of generating adversarial examples. Now, to generate adversarial examples, we start from a model that is fully trained and therefore performs the classification task with great accuracy. Let's first agree on the specific adversarial examples that we want to create. That is, what is the solution that we want to create? Imagine that now we start from a handwritten image that is representing the digit 3. We want to confuse the model into believing that this 3 is instead a 9. This is, by the way, what we call generating a targeted adversarial example, as we want that the number 3 be specifically confused with number 9. If, on the other hand, we would like that the number 3 will get confused with any other digit, then we will be implementing an untargeted adversarial example. But let's go back to the problem. In this case, because the model is already trained, the actual or current value that the model will produce for an input image 3 is an output labeled 3. Ideally, we would like that the network produce 9 as an output. So then again, there is a difference between the ideal output, which is 9, and the current output, that is 3. But this time, we will call this difference the adversarial cost. Generating an adversarial example is essentially the process of reducing this adversarial cost by changing the pixels or numerical values in the original image. And again, we do this in several steps or iterations. One caveat here though, and this is the key point, we don't want to modify the original image that represents the 3 too much, as we want that this 3 will still look like a 3 to our human eyes. Therefore, the question here that we need to answer is this one. What is the minimal modification that we need to perform on the original image 3 so that the model will mistake the 3 for a 9? Now, this way to pose the question has several implications. As we are looking for the minimal modification to the original image, the hope is that on each iteration we reduce the adversarial cost to produce the desired misclassification without affecting too much the original image. In more mathematical terms, this means that during this process we will be looking for a local minima of a function. Now, the fact that we are looking for a local minima close to the original image has additional implications. For once, the local minima will be by design close to the starting point of our search, and therefore finding a minima like that will be computationally cheaper. And we should find an example in relatively little time compared to a full training of a machine learning model. Another consequence is that because the solutions to our problem are local minima, our solution will be also relatively unstable. In practical terms, this means that most adversarial examples will not be stable or robust to small perturbations. For example, if we rotate or translate a digit in the generated adversarial example, the illusion will likely break down and the network will recognize currently that the tree is indeed a tree. As before, let's place here some small conclusions about the generation of adversarial examples. During the generation of adversarial examples, we are reducing the adversarial cost by changing the numerical values in the data sample. That data sample could be, for instance, an image. As we are trying to get a local minimum, the process of generating adversarial examples is relatively cheaper from the computational point of view. And finally, because our solution will most likely be a local minima close to the starting point of our search, most adversarial examples are usually unstable to small perturbations. In the next and last segment of this podcast, I will be telling you about some of the final thoughts and conclusions from this fascinating topic. The discovery of adversarial examples was a big surprise for the AI community. On one side, it highlighted some serious problems in our machine learning solutions. And on the other side, the community immediately found a way to mitigate the damage by the use of adversarial training under automated versions like GANs. However, adversarial training strategies in general see the presence of adversarial examples as extreme cases of misclassification. This might not be completely correct, and research is still ongoing. But on the more practical side, these strategies do not offer a scalable or even a definite answer or solution to the problem. In this sense, some papers seem to indicate that the origin of adversarial examples is likely to lie in the data and not in the model. If further research keeps confirming this, the implications for the vulnerability of machine learning models would be both large and unsolvable. For once, it will imply that we cannot escape the transferability property of adversarial examples. That is, that models trained for the same task share adversarial examples. This means that our current models will always be susceptible to attack. My dear friends, and just like this, we have arrived to the end of this podcast. There are still very exciting times for the research related to adversarial examples, and there is a lot at stake. It will be interesting to see what comes next, so stay tuned.